This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today is the big day for fans of Bernie Sanders. Vermont's junior senator and longstanding political voice officially launches his presidential campaign with a rally, music, and speeches at Burlington's Waterfront Park. We're broadcasting this show live in the noon hour, so the festivities haven't kicked off yet as we go to air. But there's already a lot of activity. There's a metallic forest of satellite antenna from all the news vans that got to set up early. Reporters are pacing, waiting to get into the venue so they can start furiously reporting on the mood, the guest list, and the free Ben & Jerry's. And people from all over Vermont and beyond are making their way into town to spur Bernie on. But how many of those supporters believe he can win? And how many see his candidacy as a strategic move to change the conversation in the Democratic primaries? Whether or not he truly believes he can win, Sanders himself says he's in the campaign because he thinks he could be the next president of the United States. So if we take him at face value, he wants to win. Today on the program, we're joined by two political analysts with insight into how these campaigns are run. They know the history of Bernie Sanders' political career, and they've been gauging the moods of the voters as the candidates on the left and right start to enter the field. Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson studies the presidency and writes the blog Presidential Power. Nice to have you back on the show, Matt.
Great to be here, Jane.
And Washington-based political analyst Ken Rudin is host of the Political Junkie podcast and was for a long time the political editor at NPR. Ken, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jane.
All right, let's take a trip in the Wayback Machine first and get a little background on this guy named Bernard Sanders. Matt Dickinson, he started running for office long before he ever won a race. He had a couple failed Senate campaigns, a couple runs for governor. How did he become the mayor of Vermont's biggest city?
By the skin of his teeth, basically. He decided after he'd lost some statewide races to lower his sights, and he won his first race by, as I recall, about 10 votes. And then he just gradually parlayed that into increasingly bigger margins and established a reputation for some maverick positions, but also some very progressive positions that gradually found favor, like redeveloping the waterfront and so on, and gradually established a good political base and just moved on from there.
And Ken Rudin, even in those days, he was talking about some of the same issues he's been talking about in this campaign now that he's trying to get more of a national platform, talking about how the middle class needs to be better supported, how we can't let the top 2 or 3% run the state or run the city or run the country. So do you see him as a guy with a consistent message throughout his political career?
Well, Jane, that's one way of putting it. I mean, what's so fascinating about Bernie Sanders is that we always talk about politicians who change their views. They either flip-flop or they evolve, and we talk about that for all the different kind of issues. Bernie Sanders, since he came to Congress in 1991, has said the same things over and over again. Maybe we didn't call it income inequality back then, but he talked about equality and fair wages and fair and corporate responsibility and a dovish foreign policy, and he has not changed that at all. So you talk about everything he's talked about for all these years, and I mean, I remember him when he was this gadfly running on the Liberty Union Party, and everybody said, boy, you know, what a kook, but he's become, I think the reason why people feel so strongly about him and adore him so much is that he is authentic, he's not packaged, and he says what he believes, and he doesn't hold his finger up get political, you know, the way politics are running at the time.
Do you see, Ken Rudin, anything interesting in the fact that we have a self-declared socialist? He has been, you know, as you said, he was one of the founders of the Liberty Union Party, but he's been calling himself a socialist for a long time. And here's a socialist now running for the presidency and at least getting some buzz.
Well, he is getting buzz, and of course, it remains to be seen how much of a buzz it is. Of course, it's fair to say, and I think Matt will probably agree, that the media are desperate for some kind of a contest in the Democratic Party. They don't want a Hillary Clinton coronation. But I really think that Bernie Sanders is not doing this because he wants either to move Hillary to the left or keep Hillary from moving too far to the center or getting basically a contest in the Democratic Party. he just feels that, you know, this is what the country should stand for. This is what the Democratic Party should stand for. And when you look at certain positions of certain candidates regarding corporations and banks and Wall Street and votes on the war, Bernie Sanders says this is not the Democratic Party that I've grown. And he's not even a Democrat. But, of course, I mean, you know, given the way that the politics is in this country, he has no choice but to run in the Democratic primaries. But he says this is not the way the country should be headed.
Matt, do you agree?
I do agree. And Ken raises an important point about the media. The media abhors a vacuum. They're going to do everything they can to try to create some sense of competition in the Democratic primary. And why not Bernie? He certainly is going to have enough of appeal to a subset of voters in the Democratic Party that he's going to attract some money, some support. And the media is looking to take Hillary down a peg, and Bernie's going to benefit by that because he's going to get relatively favorable media coverage, at least initially, assuming he doesn't have any huge missteps. And that's why this rollout is so important. This is his chance. He's been on the national stage before, but never with this level of scrutiny. So he's really got to do this right.
We are talking today, taking note of the event that people around the state and beyond are buzzing about, the official launch of the Bernie Sanders campaign for the presidency. And we're talking with political analysts Ken Rudin and Matt Dickinson about how Sanders fits into the landscape, what he's saying about his chances, how that compares to what other people, analysts, other politicians are saying, and whether or not Hillary Clinton is likely to engage in a back and forth with Sanders. Listeners, we want to know how you see this playing out. And if you're headed to the launch in Burlington today, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts and questions on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Are you a supporter? Do you see this as a good thing that Bernie has entered the race? Are you going to vote for him? Do you think your vote matters in terms of whether or not he will win the nomination, or is your vote a vote on principle? If you're a Republican, we'd love to hear from you. Where do you see the Sanders campaign fitting into the bigger picture here? Again, our number 1-800-639-2211. And let's go to Ann, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Ann. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. It's so nice to be able to say honest politician Bernie in the same phrase without apologizing, coughing, or looking sideways. As for the politics, I see a return to the FDR type of Democratic Party, and that can't be bad.
So, Ann, are you going to vote for him?
Oh, I've been voting for that boy since he first started running, and I am so proud of the achievements that he's created and contributed to Burlington, which is one of the most vibrant little towns on the map, bar none. And Bernie was right there. He's a man of ideas. He's a man of principle. And he's not just an orator. He does things. And I hope the newspapers and the media don't pick up Gadfly and Kook and run with that.
Do you see that happening so far, Ann?
I don't see it so far, but I see it in the immediate future. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Ann, thanks for your call. Appreciate your perspective. Ken Rudin, do you see that coming down the pike, that newspapers are going to, you know, take this guy, see his wild hair, his curmudgeonly attitude, and turn it into what Ann says is, you know, a negative profile of this guy as a kook or an outsider?
I actually don't. I mean, when I was talking about Gadfly and Kook, I was talking about, you know, the 1980s and, you know, the Liberty Union and things like that. But the Democratic Party has changed, and I think the issues have changed. So when you think of what Bernie Sanders stands for, I mean, given the fact that he voted against the war in Iraq, he voted against the Defense of Marriage Act, he opposes the trade deals, especially the Pacific Rim deal. I mean, this is what the Democratic Party ostensibly believes in. Now whether he wins or not, I don't think that's the issue. And of course, if you ask Bernie Sanders, he'll say, yes, I'm not in it to change Hillary Clinton. I'm in it to be the nominee. And God bless him, he probably believes in that. But look at the Democrats who he's trying to appeal to. Look at Iowa, where you know, the progressive wing of the party is very strong. Look at New Hampshire, who just loves their independence. I think that if he lasts that long, if he has the money to survive, and I mean, I saw that, like, you know, after his first few days of running, he got $2 million or $4 million, and of course, that's what Hillary Clinton will get, you know, for every 15 minutes. Hillary Clinton is talking about a $2.5 billion campaign. But, I mean, there are a lot of issues that even if the of Barack Obama, there's been a lot of disappointment among progressives in the last 2, 4, 6 years, basically about so many issues about government interference, government surveillance, the conduct of the war, the drones, the trade deals. He stands for, I mean, you could talk about socialism all you want, but his positions on many of the issues is what many Democrats believe in.
We're talking about Bernie Sanders, talking about his run for the presidency. We've got the full hour, so we can break down a lot of these topics and go into a little depth on them. So, Matt Dickinson, let me ask you about this perception of him. You said in your blog that Vermonters have really come to love Bernie's eccentricities, but you're not sure they are going to translate, whether the media does something or not. You're not sure that Bernie's own attitude is going to translate well to a national audience. I'll quote you here, if you don't mind. You say, through the years, Vermonters have adapted to even come to love Bernie's curmudgeonly personality, but it's not entirely clear how well his rumpled but lovable Uncle Bernie shtick will play on the national stage. Is that just because there's not enough time for people around the country to get used to him? Or, you know, is it something in the Vermont character that we like being spoken to abruptly? I mean, why won't the national audience necessarily take to him?
Well, they might. So in the next 6 to 7 months, we're in what we call the invisible primary. This is the period where issue activists begin taking the measure of the candidates. And really, we're going to look at three indicators here. How much money can he raise? How much endorsements does he get? Who endorses him? And third, what's his net favorability rating? That is, when you ask people, do you look favorably on him or unfavorably, what's the gap there? The bigger the gap, the more favorable people look, the stronger he is. And so the question is, at a national level, it's not so much his personality characteristics, it's whether he is perceived to be viable. And that's going to have more to do with his issues and whether they appeal to the majority of Democratic voters. So you have to look at his issue pools and compare his stances to Hillary's at this point. And the worry here, if you're Bernie's supporters, is you've got a ceiling of roughly 20 to 25% of Democrats on the progressive side of the party who are going to support a minimum wage of $15 an hour, who are diametrically opposed to the Trans-Pacific Trade Act, who want to support free education for public universities. Those are difficult issues to sell to all Democrats at the national level. And that's really, even more than his personality, I think that's going to be the problem that Bernie has to address.
Why do you think it'll be such a difficult sell?
Well, because Hillary is going to say, listen, my opponent wants to raise the minimum wage to $15. He has the right idea, but that's too extreme. Let's raise it to $12.50. My opponent wants to raise its marginal tax rates at the highest income bracket to 90%. That's too extreme. Let's raise it to 35%. And so you're going to go down the row of issues, and Hillary is going to portray herself as slightly more conservative, but certainly in the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And that's the reality of how you run for candidates, how you run for your nomination. You've got a record out there. He can't run away from the record. So he has to somehow convince a majority of the Democrats that, A, his record is not only a potential stumbling block, but actually is what the party wants, and that he can win in the general election. Look, Jane, if you're an issue activist in the Democratic Party, this is how you make your decision on who to support. You look at the candidate who is closest to your party preferences who can still win the general election. And that's where Bernie's got to show that he's viable in a general election audience.
And do you think that's possible at all?
It is possible. It's a long shot at this stage. And again, we have to see how he rolls out his campaign. What are the Ken, I think, will agree on this. The income inequality issue is the issue of the campaign, not just income inequality, but economic inequality in general. And to the extent that Bernie is authentic on this issue, and I think he is authentic, and also his policies seem viable, he's got a shot. But, you know, even Bernie's admitting this is a long shot at this stage.
Yeah, jump in there, Ken.
Well, you know something, I was just listening to what Matt said, and what he says makes complete sense. It reminds me of what Howard Dean went through in 2003 and
exactly.
2004 when he first announced he was, you know, he was the new flavor, he was exciting, he got the progressives really, really enthused and excited. But ultimately, the decision became who can beat George Bush in 2004. And the more Democrats thought about it, they thought that Howard Dean may excite a certain wing of the party, but not enough to carry the day in November. Now, right now, I kind of think that nobody thinks Bernie Sanders could beat Hillary Clinton, let alone the presidency in November of 2016, but that's not the issue. The issue, as I said earlier, is the fact that the Democratic Party seems to be moving away from its core principles. Again, I don't want this to be a Bernie versus Hillary argument, and certainly neither does a Senator Sanders. But, you know, you could talk about that. You know, he talks about where he feels about the trade deal. Hillary Clinton does not. He talks about how he feels about foreign policy, a muscular foreign policy. She does not. He talks about that he voted against the Iraqi war initially when she voted for it. Now, ultimately, I mean, we're talking about May 2015 and soon to be June of 2015. If in November and December, and Bernie Sanders seems to be making some kind of a move in Iowa and New Hampshire, and Hillary says, uh-oh, and then she could very well say, well, here's how I feel. I am a progressive. I am you. You know, I am one of you. People say, well, who cares that she was not clear about her positions back in May? It may not matter. But I think the only effect that she'll have, the Hillary Clinton, that Bernie Sanders' candidacy will have on Hillary Clinton is if you see her start to make a move. If he's not raising money, if, as Matt says, there's no endorsements, and, you know, you don't even have Governor Shumlin running, endorsing him, mm-hmm. I suspect you're not going to get many endorsements, especially against the overwhelming establishment favorite. But again, if he does well in Iowa, if the polls start to change, watch how she reacts to him.
Well, so, and right now there's no benefit to Hillary Clinton to reacting to Bernie Sanders. I mean, he's still in the single
digits.
She's
not reacting to anything. I mean, she's not even answering questions of reporters. She doesn't have to, because look what happens when you answer questions of
right.
reporters. You become Jeb Bush, who has 15 different views on whether the war in Iraq was the right thing to do. So everybody can say that, oh, you know, she's dodging the press again. She's not talking about Sidney Blumenthal. She's not talking about what emails she decided to release. She's not talking about the trade deal. Look at the polls. If she still has 65-68% among Democratic supporters, there's no risk in that strategy.
We're talking about the Bernie Sanders campaign for the presidency today on the broadcast. We are live in the noon hour as local and national media are getting set up to cover his official launch this evening at Burlington's Waterfront Park. People are starting to stream into the downtown area, getting ready to go into Waterfront Park. If you're one of those people on your way to the rally, tell us what you think. Are you a Bernie believer? Do you think he has a chance? Are you in the crowd that sees his candidacy as ultimately a losing proposition, but one that can, as people are saying, move the conversation to the left? Or are you already over the hype and hoping he'll have a swift failure in the polls? We're talking with political analysts Matt Dickinson and Ken Rudin. And if you have a question for them, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're spending the hour looking at the career and the future of Bernie Sanders. He officially launches his candidacy for president today, and as we broadcast live during the noon hour, we're hearing from two analysts who study the presidency, monitor the currents in the swirling political waters, and think about the strategies of both the candidates and the voters. Ken Rudin is host of the Political Junkie podcast. He's talking with us from his home in Washington, D.C. And Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson is with us. He studies the presidency and writes the blog Presidential Power. Listeners, tell us what you're thinking on this big day for Bernie. Are you headed to the rally to hear the speeches? Do you see Bernie as a viable candidate? Do you think he's likely to swing Hillary Clinton and other Democrats to the left? And is that enough for you? Or do you look at Bernie and think, no way, no how, no vote from me? Republicans, does a Bernie candidacy even resonate with you? You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Getting a lot of notes coming in. Alan says it was probably inevitable that Bernie would be called all sorts of names. He proudly calls himself a Democratic Socialist because things like Medicare are Democratic Socialist programs. They actually do work on most of the advanced, like Canada, and some of the less advanced nations of the world. Lee says, it's hard to know if Bernie has a chance since I'm surrounded by Bernie supporters and tend to see all good things Bernie. But Ben says he shouldn't even be eligible for any kind of office. How exactly can a commie vow to uphold and defend the Constitution?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Lynette Courtney says, I'd like to suggest a slogan for the campaign. And her slogan is, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. She says Bernie will show folks that politics doesn't have to be as usual. This should be more interesting than we can imagine. Garrett says, I'm a Champlain Valley native living in North Carolina. All I can say is, go, Bernie, go. And let's go to Robert, who's calling in from Montreal. Hey, Robert, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. I think it's so significant that Mr. Saunders is running for the question and bring up many questions related to real democracy. I'm interested particularly because my cousin was a leader of a Social Democratic Party in Canada, Jack Layton, which became the official opposition. Unfortunately, he passed away with cancer, but the party is still there. And the question I would like to ask is what your guests think the significance of Mr. Saunders' presence and the debate that should develop in relation to democracy around the world, not just for the United States, but a democratic discussion in many other countries. That's the question.
Robert, thanks for the question. Matt Dickinson, what do you think? Does this start to resonate outside the U.S. and start to become a discussion about world democracy in any way?
Well, I mean, it's a difficult question to answer because in so many ways what Bernie is pushing the United States to do, other nations have already done. And to a certain extent then, his message is going to resonate with these other countries, but it's not like they're going to look to him as setting the agenda for socialized medicine, for want of a better term. They've already got socialized medicine. They already have cradle-to-grave social welfare states. A lot of these countries do. So in that sense, I guess the most significance would be that, is he a harbinger of the United States sort of moving away from its traditionally more conservative political model and joining the rest of the Western industrial democracies in a more expansive social welfare state?
Ken, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, it seems like certainly foreign policy is more of an issue than it was 4 years ago. I mean, we saw a big uptick in foreign policy after 9/11, and you could make the case that George W. Bush won re-election on the backs of 9/11 and national security. But it seems, given what's going on, you know, with the Islamic State and North Korea and Russia moving into Crimea and expansionism towards the West, foreign policy is an issue. But again, in the Democratic Party, I think what I've seen most regarding this kind of conversation is the fact that Hillary Clinton, as she famously said this last year in an interview in The Atlantic, that what she finds with fault with the president is that she believes in a more muscular foreign policy, a more aggressive foreign policy. And if that's what Hillary Clinton wants, God bless her, but there are a lot of Democrats that we've seen this, you know, throughout the country, but Democrats just feel that, you know, after all these years of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, enough is enough, and the fact that we're still talking about sending more troops to Iraq, more, you know, boots on the ground in the Mideast, more to stabilize the government in Afghanistan, the Democrats say, well, is this why we voted for Barack Obama in 2008? Is this why what we voted for when we broke away from the Bush and the Republicans in 2008? So there is, you know, foreign policy, again, as Bernie will say, first of all, let me stop for a second. I love the fact, first of all, I love that I'm on Vermont Public Radio, but Bernie's like he's one of the neighbors. He's your next-door neighbor. I've never seen a place, I mean, in your introduction, except when Robert, who's calling from Montreal, talked about Mr. Saunders, everybody's saying Bernie like he's the guy who lives across the street, which is just remarkable. But anyway, having said
that. Well, but Ken, don't you call her Hillary, too? I mean, both Hillary and Bernie have said, call me by my first name.
You know, the reason we call her Hillary, and a lot of people think that's disrespectful, is because there's another Clinton. And I think one of the reasons we call Bush Jeb is because there have been a bunch of Bushes. So I think that in that sense, but Bernie is just so, like, you know, it's just like, you know, the guy who just, you know, who delivers my mail in the morning. So, but anyway, having said that, Bernie is really talking about income inequality and the fact, as Matt points out, that free tuition for, you know, public universities and colleges and helping the middle class recover some of its clout, which has been lost, not during the Obama administration, but for the past 40 years. But again, as we've seen after 9/11, you know, foreign policy does can become very, very significant. But right now, that's not his argument for this candidacy.
All right, we're talking about Bernie Sanders. We're talking about the candidacy today. We are looking ahead to his rally. We're broadcasting live in the noon hour, his big rally kickoff event coming at 5 p.m. A lot of Vermonters pretty excited about this. Bernie, in his last election, got more than 70% of the vote, so he has a large swelling of support here in Vermont. Matt Dickinson, do you think that's going to cross over to the border and serve him well in New Hampshire?
It will help him in two ways. One is he's going to get favorable news coverage in stations that are being broadcast from Vermont into New Hampshire. Second, he's going to be able to run a very grassroots-based campaign on the cheap because New Hampshire's next door, so he's going to be able to get his issue activists over there. So when you think about the Bernie strategy and you want to take the long shot and bet on him winning the nomination, you really have to have two things fall into place. One is Hillary's got to implode. We've got to have a smoking email. We've got to have something that drops her down. And then, two, Bernie has to do better than where the bar is set in Iowa, which, as Ken has pointed out, is it's a grassroots state. It's a caucus state. It rewards more extreme political views, issue activists. And he's got to use a good performance there as a springboard into New Hampshire, building on momentum where suddenly the media sees him as viable, and he doesn't even necessarily have to win. He just has to pull a Eugene McCarthy, who did really well in New Hampshire in 1968, enough to force Lyndon Johnson out of the race, even though McCarthy didn't win the primary. If he does really well in New Hampshire, finishes a strong second, then suddenly the Hillary juggernaut is upset and all bets are off. That's a really long shot scenario. But, you know,
can I add something to that?
Well, Ken, just one quick point. And so the Bernie has been a candidate of opportunity all his life, right? And normally somebody who believes in what he says would have been dead in the water long ago, would never got beyond Mayor Burlington. But he's always been able to take advantage of, you know, Jeffords stepping down at an opportune time. And New Hampshire next door, I mean, all the ducks are in a row for a long shot candidacy. And, you know, this is why when people ask me why should Bernie run, I say, well, why not? He's never going to get a better opportunity. Right?
Ken,
I'm sorry, Ken.
Yeah, as soon as we heard Matt say McCarthy and Johnson, I knew you were going to jump right in there.
Well, I love this. I mean, I love this because, the good news, or maybe the bad news about being extremely old like I am, is that you remember what McCarthy did. But if you remember McCarthy's strong showing in New Hampshire in 1968, yes, it did force Lyndon Johnson out of the race, but it also brought Bobby Kennedy into the race. Now, I'm not equating 68 with 2016, but there's always, you know, all the people who would love Elizabeth Warren to run, and I've seen buttons. If you like Elizabeth, you'll love Bernie. I mean, I've seen those buttons out there. But there are people out there who say that if Hillary Clinton does show weakness, and if she does show weakness in the early contest in Iowa and New Hampshire, then there may be pressure on other Democrats to get in the race. Of course, we're not even talking about other Democrats who will be in the race. Martin O'Malley, the former Maryland governor, Lincoln Chafee, the former Rhode Island governor, former Republican, actually, Republican senator as well, and maybe Jim Webb, the former senator from Virginia. So we're not talking about, here we go again, a Hillary versus Bernie campaign. There may be other Democrats who can complicate this whole thing. But I just wonder if Hillary Clinton – look, here's the opposite part. Let's just say Bernie Sanders does do very well in Iowa and does do very well in New Hampshire, and yet then he faces – primaries like sometimes 15 at a time. If you're Hillary Clinton and you have a gazillion dollars in your bank account, maybe you can afford to lose or not do very strongly in the first two contests, but with that monetary advantage, go on and sweep. And one thing we're not talking about is that one of the advantages of Hillary Clinton is a sense of history. The fact is she has the best chance to be the nation's first female president. And for all the talk about the emails and Benghazi and Cindy Blumenthal and everything else, there is a sense of history that many Democratic voters, they may not love her views on everything, but there's a sense of, like, we could make history here.
Again, today we're talking about the Bernie Sanders candidacy. A lot of listeners who want to weigh in. If you're among them, if you're maybe headed to Burlington's Waterfront Park today, you want to tell us why you support Bernie for president, or maybe you don't, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211 or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Trudy says, no thanks. I would hate for the entire country to have to be subjected to the failing Vermont way. Pretty strong thoughts there. Turge Anderson says, I tend to think of Bernie's candidacy more in terms of long-term movement building than a simple one-shot run for office. From his early campaigns with the Liberty Union through his mayoralty, then his years in Congress, Bernie has always framed his efforts as working towards stronger progressive movement in this country. And let's go to a call from Albania. Peter Clavel, former mayor of Burlington, is on the line with us. Peter Clavel, nice to have you on the show. What are your thoughts?
Jane, how are you?
Well, yes, thanks.
I'm going to miss the event today in Burlington, and it's too bad because I know it's going to be extremely exciting. But I thought from Albania, this Vermonter could offer a unique perspective concerning Bernie Sanders. As one who worked for Bernie for most of his time in office, for about 7 years, I was a community and economic development director, and then I followed him in office and served as mayor for seven terms, 15 years. I want to say that I just think it's great that he's throwing his hat in the ring and running for president. And he's going to bring something to the political arena that not too many candidates bring these days. He's principled. He's authentic. He's consistent. And he knows how to get things done. So it's great. And this Vermonter in Albania enthusiastically supports his quest.
Well, Peter Clavel, thank you so much for calling in. There's an endorsement from Albania from former Burlington Mayor Pete Clavel. Let's go to Sabra, who's calling in from Norwich. Hi, Sabra. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. I just read online the Nation of Change online newspaper that they'd been hearing that there was support from Republicans. And I don't know the numbers, but I know that when I've campaigned for progressives, I've noticed that Bernie sometimes will have lawn signs that might have been, you know, also with a Republican candidate. And I just think that would be very interesting to hear from Matt or Ken how some Republicans may even vote for Bernie. And I would also say that I'm a huge supporter, and I would also like Bernie to endorse or sort of say something towards Jill Stein, or perhaps run with Jill Stein or Elizabeth Warren. So thanks very much.
Sabra, thanks for your call. Just to add another one in here before we get some responses, we did get a question from John who wants to know from Bernie, who would you have for a running mate? But interesting to think about who might run with Bernie on this ticket, should it get that far. So Ken and Matt, you know, Sabra saying, what about the possibility that some Republicans might find his message appealing? Do you see that happening at all, Matt?
Well, Ken's raised an important issue on the foreign policy side, and that's about the only time that I think a Republican, sort of a Rand Paul-type libertarian who wants to have the U.S. disengage from this war on terror and also at home restore some semblance of civil liberties, there's a possible alliance there, ideological alliance, but I don't actually see it happening in practice because you've got your Republican candidates who are espousing the same position. So if Bernie's banking on the Republican crossover vote to snatch the nomination, sweet dreams, Bernie. It's going to end pretty soon.
You agree with that, Ken?
Well, yes. I mean, I guess maybe there are some Republicans who feel there are not enough Republican candidates running for president already. There's only like 7,915 running. But, you know, and we also saw it going back into the past, too. We have seen Republicans in some primaries. I remember in 1972, the Republicans will vote for George Wallace in primaries just to cause mischief. They did that in Michigan and Maryland and things like that. But ultimately, you know, if there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the Republican field, and the Republicans want to teach Hillary Clinton a lesson, you may see them coming out more for Bernie Sanders. But for the most part, I think there are plenty of Republican candidates on the GOP side of the ledger that will keep the Republicans on that side.
You know, Republicans may see Bernie Sanders' record on gun rights, though, and say, well, hey, there's something we can get behind. I mean, if you know Vermont politics at all, you know that gun rights is usually kind of the third rail of Vermont politics. Very liberal gun control laws in the state, one of the most liberal states on gun restrictions. But Bernie Sanders, you know, typically votes in national issues against gun restrictions. So maybe a little bit of Republican support on that issue, at least.
Well, that reminds me of Dennis Kucinich. I mean, Dennis Kucinich was anti-abortion for the longest time. And then some people said, well, maybe Republicans will vote for Dennis Kucinich because he's anti-abortion. I don't think Republicans will vote for Bernie Sanders because of his gun, because given the fact that you have Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Ben Carson, Mike Huckabee, old Ted Cruz, all those who also oppose, who support gun rights, I think there's no shortage of Republicans to vote for on that issue.
Here's a question I want to pose to you. Got to go to a quick break, so think on this for a moment. But something like the issue of gun restrictions, it seems like Vermont, you know, that's a sort of geographically specific position based on the situation and the atmosphere and the culture of Vermont, and maybe a position that he would take a different tact on if he were trying to win the support for becoming the president. Are there other issues where you see this candidate who is known for taking a position and holding it for 30, 40 years as maybe having to be a little bit more malleable if he really does want to be the national candidate? We're talking about the Bernie candidacy today. We'll get your thoughts on that coming up. We want to hear from more listeners what your thoughts on. Maybe you're neutral, but you see the chessboard laid out and you want to tell us what you see as the strategy here. Our number 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking with political analysts Ken Rudin from Washington and Matt Dickinson from Middlebury. We've gone through some of the highlights of Bernie Sanders' career. We're looking ahead to his bid for the presidency. We're also hearing from a lot of you with your thoughts on Bernie Sanders running for president. If you'd like to weigh in, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That number again is 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts online on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Phil says, this is probably the most exciting political event since Teddy Roosevelt's speech in Barrie during his Bull Moose campaign. We got a note from Ed who says, I will vote for Senator Sanders, but I will be willing to bet he gets a fraction of the coverage that Ron and Rand Paul get in the media, even though he is as far to the left as they are to the right. That's just our media. And Wayne in Aetna, New Hampshire says, based on a talk Bernie gave in Hanover, New Hampshire a few months ago, I think he sees an opportunity if he can motivate the 18 to 30-year-olds to vote. His issues should resonate with them, and there are a lot of them who have been sitting out. So some thoughts there on Bernie Sanders, on strategy, on your feelings. Again, listeners, weigh in. Go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Post your thoughts there. Before the break, I was asking you, Ken and Matt, if you see any sort of ability to have more nuanced positions on some issues that may be very specific to Vermont but may have to change a little bit or be a different scene if you're a national candidate, something like gun rights, that maybe he'll have the same position but may be more geographically specific to Vermont. Matt Dickinson, since you're in Vermont, do you see any other issues like that?
There are a couple of issues. Immigration is an issue that has... possible to play both ends against the middle. He's actually been a vocal critic of these guest worker programs, which provide subsidies for guest workers to hold down jobs. And he argues it's been taking jobs away from the youth vote, and potential vote. So there may be something there on immigration that he may be able to modify his views as he moves forward. A lot of his other views related to income inequality, there's always room for maneuvering. You know, start out with a $15 minimum wage and you bargain your way down to 14 or something like that. But I think Ken made a really important point very early in this. One of the things that's going for Bernie, one of the reasons that people like him is he's authentic. He's a guy who's been basically, we know what he stands for. We know what we're going to get with Bernie. So you don't want to lose that. That's an important part of your persona.
Ken?
I agree. What Matt just said at the end is exactly the way I feel. The appeal of Bernie Sanders is that he doesn't, you know, lick his finger, put it up and test the wind. He has been saying, as Vermont Public Radio has pointed out in many great pieces, and I've heard them all, that he's been saying the same thing for decades. He's true to his word. One of the things that's hurting Rand Paul, I mean, Rand Paul was elected to the Senate in 2010 as a true libertarian opposed to foreign aid, but as, you know, the ISIS advances in Syria and Iraq have come in, you know, are happening. Rand Paul is saying, well, maybe we should have more foreign aid. Maybe we should have more support for the Pentagon. And true believers who once loved Rand Paul's views of being so absolutist on foreign aid said, you're selling out. The last thing in the world that if Bernie Sanders joins the politicians who sell out on issues, then God help us all, because then there'll be nobody pure left. I mean, whether they're winning issues or losing issues, I think the strength that Bernie Sanders brings is that he's real, legitimate, and does not play the politics of it.
Let's go to Debbie, who's been waiting on the line from Adams, Massachusetts. Hi, Debbie. Go right ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm heading up from the Berkshires to the rally right now. My comment was about how we have a dialogue as Democrats about this presidential race. Hillary Clinton really is, if you look at her actual record, I run a group on Facebook called Progressives Against Hillary, and this woman is really very much Republican, from her connections with Monsanto to her connections.
Oh, Debbie, I think we might be losing your connection. Sounds like going through some good Vermont cell coverage there. Yeah, sorry about that. But, Debbie, I do see your point, and we can run with that, whether, you know, you see Hillary as more to the right. You see Sanders, it sounds like, as a progressive, so the Democrats may want to get behind a more progressive candidate and look at some of Hillary Clinton's connections and see that they aren't necessarily what the progressive Democrats are looking for. I appreciate that perspective. Let's go to Dan, who's calling in from Newfane. Hi, Dan. Your thoughts this morning.
Thanks. You know, I think there are actually a few factors that give Bernie a fighting chance to make this a serious candidacy. First of all, his issues, income inequality, jobs, they've been resonating for a while, but not like they are currently. You know, 4 years, 8 years ago, they wouldn't have had the same resonance. And he's been working, hammering on these issues forever. So his issues have come to the front right now. The other factor is, there, you know, we talk about the electorate, but really there's perhaps the largest chunk of the electorate are those who have given up on voting. And one of the reasons they've done that is they have a hard time distinguishing between Republicans and Democrats. They don't believe in the system. So the fact that he has been outside the Democratic Party could very well play in his favor as the ultimate, you know, outsider who's using the party simply to make the event happen, the running for the presidency. You know, Howard Dean ran as a progressive, but it took everybody by surprise because he was like a Democratic Leadership Council kind of Democrat, and, you know, he changed his stripes to run, and so it wasn't authentic, and it didn't succeed. I think Bernie has that long-lasting, you know, he's been doing it for a while, and I think that goes in his favor.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for that thought. I'm going to get one more in here before we go back to Ken and Matt to close this out this hour. Let's go to Tom in Shrewsbury. Hi, Tom. You there, Tom? What are
Good
you thinking?
Morning.
Yeah, hi.
I think Bernie is a wonderful man. He's got some great ideas, but his ideas are a little old. He's been stuck in the same place for a long time. I think if you talk to more local Vermonters, get home here and talk to more local Vermonters, you'd get in tune with what's happening and what the people are thinking.
Why, Tom, what do you think Bernie's not responding to?
What
do you want to hear from him?
Pardon me?
What do you want to hear from Bernie? When you say he's not listening to the people, what is it that you would like him to be doing?
We don't want to be letting the illegal aliens drive and work in the United States without working papers.
Got it. Tom, I'm going to stop you there and move over to our analysts, to Ken and Matt. So we were just talking about a position on immigration and how that's going to play on the national scene is very different than perhaps a discussion about immigration in Vermont. You know, as we're having this conversation, as you're hearing from people like Debbie, who's coming up from the Berkshires, and like Tom, who says, I'm a Vermonter, he's not listening to me. Where do we go from here in thinking about how the Sanders candidacy may play out in the next couple of months as this campaign just kicks off? Ken?
Well, I mean, let's face it. We're not talking about the primary in Vermont. We're talking about a battle for the Democratic nomination, which is a national battle. So I don't mean to – I'm not criticizing or disparaging Tom's views at all, but it's really not about Vermont anymore. I mean, of course, you know, we've seen Bernie Sanders run for office all these years in Vermont, but now it's a national campaign for the presidency of the United States. And so, of course, now the issue is Iowa and where the Democrats feel – you know, we talked about whether – he has old issues that he's kept up with. Oh, you know, he hasn't changed. But the country seems to be changing. Think of same-sex marriage. I mean, Bernie Sanders has called for that for a long time. Remember in 2008, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, all most of the Democrats said that the definition of marriage is between a man and a woman. They evolved. So you can make the case that maybe Democrats are coming towards the Bernie Sanders position. The only P.S. to all this, and I know I'm talking a lot, but the only P.S. to this is that pretty soon it will not be Bernie versus Hillary. There will be others in the race, mm-hmm. with probably some with more money, and we'll just see if it becomes Hillary Clinton versus the Seven Dwarfs. And if that becomes the issue, then Bernie's appeal could decline.
All right. Well, Matt Dickinson, you're good with a pithy end, so I will give it to you here.
Bernie's trying to catch lightning in a bottle, Jane, and we're here to observe whether he can do it, and I can't wait. So go, Bernie.
Well, it is certainly interesting to watch. Ken Rudin, longtime political editor at NPR, he's now the host of the Political Junkie podcast based in Washington, D.C. Ken, thank you so much for being on the program.
Jane, thank you so much. I could call you by your first name, Jane, right?
That's right. Yeah, I only go by Jane. It's perfect. And thanks as well to Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson. He writes the blog Presidential Power. Matt, thank you.
Ms. Lindholm, thank you.
All right. Well, listeners, you can follow all of VPR's coverage of today's events online at vpr.net. Our Sanders coverage includes archival audio of Mayor Bernie Sanders and key moments from his terms in Congress and the U.S. Senate. It's all at vpr.net. Vermont Edition, produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Sarah Matthews. Mary Williams directed the show, and our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.